Welcome back to Comic Fan Commentary. I'm your host, Adam. I'm joined by my friend, Ronnie.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Glad to be back for another week.
And today, our moderator returns. We have Rob joining us again.
What's up, guys? I spent the last couple months finding myself along the long Texas roads.
Well, that sounds like that's a lot to unpack. But we have a lot of sports to talk about today, guys, so let's just hop right into it.
So, first things first, Adam has told me that he would like to rant about the AP Top 25, and I am totally okay with that because I, too, have some words. We'll start with the fact that they put the Big Ten back in the AP Top 25, even though their first games are not until late October. What do you think about that, Adam?
I've always questioned the AP Top 25 whenever they rank teams. They always put a lot of weight into where you were ranked at the preseason, which doesn't make a lot of sense. Really favors teams that are suspected to be the stronger conferences, SEC, Big Ten. I feel like those conferences have definitely been favored by the AP Top 25 poll. This makes no sense. You're telling me that Ohio State received two first place votes. So two people said they're the best team in the country right now, even though they have yet to play a game.
Yeah, that's a total joke. And even what's even worse about that, they have Oregon from the Pac-12 at number 12, and they're not even going to play a game this season.
They took them out because they said they weren't going to play. And then they said, oh, we're going to play, you know, in a month or two. And so AP is like, oh, yeah, we'll just put you right back where you were. But what are you talking about? Are you going to put them at number one if the three teams ahead of Ohio State lose? So you're going to tell me an 0-0 team might be the number one team in the nation? Make them play a game, then put them back in. Get together, AP Top 25.
Right now, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Penn State, they're all in the top 25, haven't even played a game. You can see the clear SEC bias this week. We have three SEC teams in the top four and Clemson at one, of course. And just the fact that they rank Texas in the top 25 like every year, that's a joke to me. And I think like anybody who hasn't gone to UT or is a Longhorn fan will agree with that.
They just still have questions on you putting 0-0 teams, you know, zero wins, zero losses, zero games played. You're saying that they've had a stronger season and should be ranked higher than teams that have already played. That their win percentage is zero because they have yet to win a game. Yet you think Ohio State's the number four team in the country right now?
Moving on, let's get into some college football upsets. First off, we have TCU going 33-31 against number 9 Texas, and that is something I love to say.
Overrated Longhorns fall again. No one is shocked. Sam Ellinger is not the best quarterback in the country, yet the media wants him to be. When was the last time that they were in the national title discussion? Every single year, the media puts Texas too high, even though four losses every single year in the past 5 years. Doesn't really sound like a top 10 team to me.
I think TCU's quarterback, Duggan, he's kind of a baller. I've watched him play just against like the teams I follow in the Big 12 over the past, like, what, 2 years, this year and last year. And boy, that man can ball. He can run. He can throw. He's definitely a force to be reckoned with. He's going to be a force to be reckoned with in the Big 12, at least. Big 12 is just full of quarterbacks. Some of them have it, and some of them don't. I think he has it.
I don't think Texas has it.
Oh, yeah. No argument for me. So this weekend, we saw number 24 Pitt fall to NC State. We saw number 25 Memphis fall to SMU. We saw number 11 UCF take an L against Tulsa.
Beginning of the season, who did I say was always overrated? I mentioned Texas and UCF.
But Adam, those are former national champions.
Yeah. With some asterisks on one of those.
Up next, we got number 16 Mississippi State falling to Arkansas. We have number 18 Oklahoma fall to Iowa State.
Yeah, we saw Spencer Rattler again kind of struggle in those key situations. It was very similar to the way they played Kansas State, where Iowa State just started getting on a roll on offense, and Oklahoma just couldn't break their momentum. A lot of unanswered points on Iowa State, and they had a veteran quarterback in Brock Purdy just be able to lead them to victory. It's nice to see Oklahoma tumble a little after they've consistently forced their way into the national semifinals year after year. So it's kind of nice to see a little bit of a shakeup. And I just wanted to mention how all these quote-unquote upsets are happening, but these are technically upsets because the AP Top 25 ranked these teams. And again, it calls into question how good of a ranking system even is it?
He was a very high-rated prospect coming out of high school, and now he's like a freshman quarterback, you know, taking the reins from Jalen Hurts. But I mean, that's Jalen Hurts, right? But they also did lose some receivers, like some big names on their offense. So I can see Oklahoma struggling down the stretch against other teams. Like if they did lose to Kansas State, they lost to Iowa State. TCU is definitely going to be a force as well. Like I said, Duggan, he can make things happen on offense. Right now, Oklahoma can't really do that. Let's see if their defense can hold up. I would be a little worried if I was an Oklahoma fan, but in general, I'd be worried if I was a Big 12 fan, because at this rate, it doesn't seem like any of our teams are going to be in the playoffs or in the conversation to get to the playoffs.
It's starting to look like the Big 12 champion is going to have 3 or 4 losses at the end of the year.
Either that or it's going to be some teams just like that we're not used to being there, like an Iowa State, Kansas State championship.
Oh man,
how weird would that be? Yeah,
right. The reason Oklahoma isn't doing well is because they haven't found a transfer quarterback yet. You know, just give them a second and they'll bounce back. All right, they're probably scouts are out looking, I bet you, as we speak.
I think there was a College Game Day sign that said Baker, Kyler, and Jalen all prove that OU is a second choice school.
Oh, maybe the Big 12 is just incredibly mediocre.
Hey, it's okay though. Shout out to our team Vandy for scoring a touchdown against LSU. So you got to give it up to somebody at least.
Yeah, for all our Nashville fans out there, there's your shout out.
41-7. Yeah, at least they got the 7. No goose egg. Next up, we have some more upsets, this time coming from the English Premier League. Start us off, we have Aston Villa going 7-2 against Liverpool.
Liverpool giving up 7 goals in one game? What happened there, Ronnie?
I know we've mentioned this already. Liverpool is showing some cracks on their back line, the back four. I can't be too harsh on Liverpool. 3 out of the 7 goals, 3, all came off deflections from defenders that were, depending on which side you support, either the luckiest deflections if you're an Aston Villa fan or the unluckiest Liverpool fan with the deflections. 3 of the 7 goals all were due to a deflection where the goalkeeper, Adrian, had zero chance of making a play on the ball. So subtract those. Isn't that terrible of a loss? Yes, it's still 7 at the end of the day. That's what ended up happening. I don't want to be too harsh, but seeing Liverpool lose by a lot is always nice. Feels like it reminds everyone else in the Premier League that they're not an untouchable team, that they definitely can be picked apart. I just can't be too harsh because they did have some terrible, terrible luck against Aston Villa.
Yeah, they were without their starting goalkeeper in Alisson, but even without the 3 deflection goals, they still gave up 4 to Aston Villa. And Ollie Watkins is looking like an elite striker against Liverpool, who we have mentioned the defensive deficiency, and we kind of called this.
Yeah, we said the championship slump is gonna be a thing, man. It happens in all sports. I don't think anyone's able to escape it. You know, you can do your best, but it's gonna get you at some point.
We have Tottenham going 6-1 against Manchester United.
This game for me was hilarious to watch. Manchester United has been rumored to every attacker that has a pulse in the transfer window. And then what I've always seen as their deficiency is their defense. And that just showed out today of Harry Maguire is not the elite center back that you paid for. He was the most expensive transfer for a defender ever. He cost more than Virgil van Dijk. And they handed him the captain's armband to be the leader of this team because they spent so much on one player at central defense. And now Man U fans are calling for his head. They are calling him a refrigerator based on his size and stature, and how easily people open and close the door on him. There was even one goal that I thought, wow, how does an elite player of any caliber do? Harry Maguire ripping down pulling the jersey of Luke Shaw, who also plays for Manchester United, because he was trying to clear the ball. He yanked him down to the ground. As he was trying to clear it, it gets deflected off Maguire right into a Tottenham player, and he just taps it into the goal. My question is, do we label him a bust yet, or is that a hot take?
I think he's had enough time. What is it, a season and going on a quarter now where he's been? I don't want to say he's a bust, but him and old Gunner, I can never pronounce his name, their manager, are definitely on the hot seat, especially the manager. Because it is the manager's job to strategize, make sure your team is prepared for every game, every week. It doesn't matter if it's a Premier League game, Europa League game, Carabao Cup game, whatever it may be. It is the manager's job to make sure your team is prepared. And clearly a scoreline of 6-1 with red cards involved and yellow cards, that is just like the lack of a team manager doing his job. So I think the manager's more in a hot seat than the player himself. Because it happens, right? In sports, sometimes you have a player who has great potential, doesn't add up to it. You switch the coaching around him, and then they blossom. Harry Maguire could potentially see that happen. I just don't know if it's under the manager right now. There's a reason he was valued at so much, but I don't want to call him a bust just yet. As a captain, though, captains have to lead a little bit better, and pulling down your own players is just, I don't know if that's the way to go.
Two things. So the first thing is, I don't think he will ever reach the potential of being worth the most expensive defender in the world. No matter what coach you put with him, I just don't see that happening. Not that technically gifted with the ball. So I think he is a big, strong center back. But you know who else was? Phil Jones. And then second, as a captain, there was that little tiff that was breaking out between Martial and a couple of the Tottenham defenders. And where was Maguire in all this? He was halfway across the pitch. I think Maguire is a bust for the price he was at. He's not the best defender in the world, so why'd you pay Leicester City almost $90 million? He could still be a good defender and help Man United in their backline issues. No way was he ever worth that price tag.
Yeah, I'm going to have to side with Adam, and I'll flat out say he's a bust. Bro, if I'm spending $90 million on a defender, we're not going down 6-1 against Tottenham, you know what I mean?
I mean, if you're looking at Liverpool,
it could be worse. There's a handful of people in the Premier League in the hot seat. Let's see how they handle it.
Speaking of the hot seats in the Premier League, what is happening at the top of the table right now? If you look at who's currently leading, in what world did we think the top four was going to be Everton, Aston Villa, Leicester City, and Arsenal?
So the only one I'm not too surprised by seeing in the top four is Leicester. I think towards the end of last season, they were kind of on the uptick. I think this is probably the second best team behind their championship winning team from 2015, where they had that historic run. I didn't think Arsenal would be top four. I could see them being easily like top 10, but not in the top four. Aston Villa, who was almost a relegation team last season, having secured 9 points already and sitting in second, beat Liverpool 7-2. Is it a fluke? I don't know. I don't want to say it is, but I also don't want to say that they're, you know, going to stay top two, because I would be surprised to see that happen. Now, the biggest surprise for sure, and you called it, Adam, it had to be Everton. They're firing on all cylinders. Ancelotti has found a formula, has found the players on the pitch that he needs. And Calvert-Lewin, he's scored hat-trick after hat-trick. James is dominating the midfield. What else do you need? You know, you're winning. They've not dropped any points, by the way. They've gone 4-4. They have a perfect record. They're the only team in the Premier League with a perfect record left. I don't know where Everton's coming from, but I'm happy to see them flourishing.
It was that midfield overhaul that really helped them. But on the topic of Aston Villa, I've honestly really enjoyed their transfer. They used to be try to get talent from Turkey or teams that were out there that have never played English-style football. But they've kind of switched to this approach to where they're picking up guys from the championship and talents who they've outgrown that second league, and putting them in the first league has really flourished for them. They were able to secure the loan of Ross Barkley as well, and they they look like a decent team, not going to lie. I mean, we saw how well they can score goals, and that was always their issue when they were facing relegation. So I think Aston Villa, this is just part of the process. This is just their trust the process moment. And I don't know if it's going to last all season. I doubt it will. But it is nice to see a crazy shakeup in the table. If I bet on it, on what the table would be like now, I would have lost all my money.
Oh, yeah, same.
Yeah, who doesn't like a good shakeup to the ladder, though? It keeps the sport fresh, if you ask me. So, moving on to the NFL, we have an interesting debate brought to us by the Houston Texans. Does a blimp fly or hover?
That's how quiet it is. And it sounds like somebody's flying over.
Yeah, that's what it's doing.
I mean, like, it's hovering right now, if you want to keep it technical. It's just chilling up there.
It is flying overhead.
It's hovering over top. It's not flying.
Oh, it's not flying?
No,
so that thing up in the air is not flying?
It's a form of flying.
So, does a blimp fly or hover?
Bruh. I think it was Socrates who said that when the Goodyear blimp is there, I'll be there, something like that. I don't know. I love JJ's reaction. He's like,
wait, what?
He's like, so that thing up there above us in the air, it's not flying.
What are we really like splitting hairs on here? You're losing the game.
I always just associated, honestly, I always associated hovering as like a slow, like free fall down. But I'm not a scientist.
Nah,
here.
Bro, that's also a glide.
Exactly.
So wait,
falling with style.
Do blimps glide?
Blimp glide. The real question is it gliding?
You know what a peaceful time, man, on the football field. While JJ was pondering whether or not a blimp flies or hover, the Houston Texans managed to trade away their first and second round picks for next year. They also fired their GM/head coach, Bill O'Brien, today. How do you think that that's going to affect the Houston Texans moving forward?
Well, I think the whole city of Houston is celebrating the fact that B.O.B. is gone. He traded away their best playmaker, who they literally ran their offense through DeAndre Hopkins. Bill O'Brien was trying to justify the trade by trying to feed David Johnson, who they received from the Cardinals, more snaps, more plays directed to him, to try to justify that the Hopkins trade wasn't all that bad. But it was. Firing Bill O'Brien is just the start of it. They honestly should have fired him last year after they choked against the Chiefs, because a good coach doesn't let a team choke that bad. And same could be said for the Falcons. You had to get rid of O'Brien. I think it should have happened probably before the season. You have the worst record in the league, so you'd think, hey, at least we get a high draft pick. Well, no, you traded those away for Laremy Tunsil from the Dolphins. So at this point, they're in a really tough spot. They might want to think about blowing it up, trading assets, get picks, get younger. And they also, believe it or not, have the highest salary cap out of the entire league. They pay the most for their players. It is really hard to justify a GM operating with spending the most in the league and also the worst record.
Yeah, that's quite the predicament.
I like to see Houston fail.
Where's all this hate from? I mean, if it was like the Astros, I mean, yeah, everyone would agree with that. Or even the Rockets, but like the Texans?
The Texans have never had it together. Like, they drafted David Carr way back when they first were in the league. And he would have been a promising talent if he didn't get sacked every two plays. Can't get over that hump, because they've been good for the past few years when they've had Deshaun Watson. And whenever J.J. Watt stays healthy, they are a solid team. But after losing Hopkins, that really hurts Watson's ability to play the best that he can. You see him take snaps now, and it looks like he's just running for his life half the time because his receivers just aren't open.
Hey, receiver diff. Well, let's hope they figure that out. I do feel for Watson. He's a great quarterback. You have to be able to turn the teams around. That's why you're getting picked so high up. The quarterback is like the most important position. Obviously, the line matters, and they need to get him a line as well.
I think they don't have the worst line. they pay the most for their team. It's just they don't have anyone to get open for him. So anytime he's trying to get the ball downfield, he has no options. So he's always looking at his checkdowns, and checkdowns can get blown up easy. So then he's got a scramble run for his life.
Hey, man, Texas teams are just not doing well in the NFL right now.
Oh, true. We're not even going to talk about the Cowboys.
we'll save that for a future episode.
All we have to say is they were one lucky onside kick away from being 0-4, all right? Just put that for reference. That's all it is. One lucky onside kick from 0-4.
Let's get out of Texas football right now. Let's move on to the MLB. So we're in the playoffs. Right now, 7 Central teams made it to the playoffs. 0 make it to the divisional round.
Everyone at the beginning of the season was kind of ragging on that, the AL, the American League Central and the National League Central, saying those were weaker divisions. Those teams' fan bases fired back saying, oh, well, how come 7 out of 16 teams were from the Central? Well, it's because the expanded playoffs help you get in because you didn't deserve to be there. Looking at the divisional round one round later, and what do you know, they all got knocked out. None of them even got matched up against each other. They all got knocked out. They had 7 chances to make it to the divisional round, and all their teams lost. So it just kind of shows that the East and the West in, honestly, both leagues, American and National, are that much stronger.
I'm just curious as to who do you think is kind of your dark horse pick here, Adam, since your Twins are not in here.
I had White Sox. Ryan wanted Twins. With the White Sox being knocked out, unfortunately, the White Sox showed us that they were very streaky. There's two sides to that coin. You can also be very hot and very cold. And they just came out pretty flat. Their pitching wasn't there. Here they are at home. Looking at it now, the favorite's obviously the Dodgers. We already discussed how they're a broken team. They're so strong. If I was totally unbiased, I would say the Astros might make a run at it. They are very experienced playoffs. They have veteran leadership across pretty much every position. They have solid starting pitching. But I'm not going to pick them. I'm still bitter, and I'm not totally unbiased. I'd also hate to say this is the Yankees. They have such a strong hitting lineup that they can just hit homers on you all day. And that's a problem when it comes down to October. Shelling through bullpens is what the Yankees feed on, and I got to say that I think the Yankees are my dark horse pick now. I hope they follow suit with the White Sox and they lose after I pick them, but Marlins win their series against the Cubs, and they are still undefeated in playoff series. Both times they've been to the playoffs, they won the World Series, and Marlins are still undefeated when it comes to playoff series.
That's pretty impressive. Definitely not something you would expect from a team like the Marlins, right?
Yeah, they don't make it often, but when they do, they win it.
It's like, it sounds like they're the 6th seed New York Giants.
All right, so let's get into some transfers, specifically the transfer deadline day.
Yeah, so Ryan would be happy because Thomas Partey had his release clause activated with 38 minutes left in the transfer deadline. Arsenal was trying to sprint to get that deal done, and they were able to secure it, I think, roughly 10 minutes before the deadline happened. They got one of their midfielders that they wanted. They weren't able to get Hasem Ohar. I think this is a solid pickup for him.
Arsenal was kind of looking at Ohar. I can't say his name either. I know he had been in links with them for a while, and that was like a significant target for them. Sadly, it didn't work out for them. But picking up Partey, he's a 6'1", 170-pound, 27, not the youngest, not the oldest, but he's coming from a very experienced side of Atletico Madrid and playing, you know, in La Liga. So he's definitely got good experience under him. For Arsenal, they're creeping their heads up. I know we mentioned how they're top 4 right now. They're number 4, but they're definitely making moves to stay relevant. I know I'm probably the least fan of Arsenal in this, you know, podcast, but I got to give credit where credit's due. Mikel Arteta is putting together a side that's working. I just don't know if such attack-minded, offense-minded players, or just filling up your rosters with forwards and midfielders, is the way to go, in my opinion, for a team like Arsenal. But if it works, it works.
Well, I think Partey, he's a pretty solid defender for a midfielder. At Atletico, he was also used in the left-back role. So I think he's a pretty strong part of linking the defense to the midfield, because they already have a lot of attacking options with like Danny Ceballos in the midfield. So I think Partey is honestly a really solid pickup. I always thought that's what they need fixing is their defense. But if you're going out to get a midfielder who's going to help you control possession and take possession away from attacking teams, I think that's really solid for what they're trying to accomplish.
All right, to one of the Manchester teams that's not doing so hot, the Red Devils, man. What were they thinking? What were they doing on October 5th, 2020 on transfer deadline day?
So they were able to snatch up Edinson Cavani, who is a free agent from PSG. And that's definitely a panic buy, because he's been a free agent this whole time. Yet you choose the last day possible to sign him, and you're going to tell me that you've been targeting him for a long time. It's like, well, you don't even have to pay a team any sort of transfer fee to get him. Obviously, this was just a rush decision, because you couldn't pick up Jadon Sancho or Jack Grealish or any other winger you're rumored to, and so you decided to pick up the best attacking option out there. Cavani, he's a great player, don't get me wrong, but this was just Man United trying to try to get some attacking option from the transfer market, and he's all that they could get.
This is the Jadon Sancho replacement special for Edinson Cavani. I feel bad because I do like Cavani. I think he's definitely past his prime, I want to say. Either way, it's somebody that they picked up. I do like their Alex Telles or pick up more, because I do think he was playing really, really well for Porto. And I know he was a player that was linked to multiple teams, so I know there's interest from different squads for him. I just think it's overshadowed by the fact that Edinson Cavani, big name, yeah, he's not. He was a free agent, essentially. He didn't have a team. You know, he's the generic value, the good brand value, instead of the name brand.
I definitely do like the Alex Telles transfer as well. I think left back was a position they definitely needed to solidify. As we saw, Luke Shaw got ripped to the ground pretty easy by Harry Maguire. So they obviously need someone stronger who won't go to the ground so easy. He plays continental football a lot with Porto. He's a solid defensive option for them. Someone who's a pretty solid passer on the left. They need a second center back still. I guess you take what you can get at this point. They don't really have any other defensive options that I would trust in Champions League scenarios. Getting Telles helps, but I think they still need that second center back. Hey, deadline day's over, man. So they're start dealing with what you got now. And then they also were able to secure one for the future, and from Atalanta, Ahmad Traore, heading to Man United in January, just because of work permit issues. But he's 18 years old. Decent transfer, except that 40 million euros for him, which is a little pricey for someone who's not going to be immediately slotted into your squad. And if you're going to pay 40 million for someone for the future, they were only 20 million off from getting Jadon Sancho. They were offering 100 mil, and Borussia Dortmund wanted 120 mil. So instead of paying 40 for someone you're not going to play yet, get someone like Jadon Sancho, who's going to play now and provide that future impact for you with that 20 mil. Just don't understand why that was the holdup.
These are more business moves by Manchester United getting, you know, every club does it. You get these younger players who get scouted by their, you know, their professional recruits. They bring them into the club, develop them a little bit, and sell them off for some profit, major profit, whatever it may be. Sometimes they end up keeping them, but I think it's more of a business transaction part of the game. I don't know if these players are going to be like Traore or their new Uruguayan transfer of Facundo Pelestri. I think it's just a business move. That Facundo Pelestri is 18 years old also, just like Traore. So I think it's just a business thing. They're probably going to get loaned off, either sold for small profit. Well, when I mean small profit of like maybe a 10 million, but I don't know if these players are really going to see the limelight of them wearing the Red Devils jersey in a Premier League start. I'd be surprised.
Hey, 10 million in the Premier League, that's chump change.
You think it so, really but it was 20 mil that held up the Jadon Sancho transfer.
Okay, but that was like they're getting close to like $100 million though. The total value is a little bit different.
I mean, you're already spending $100 million. What's 120 if he is that important to what you're trying to do?
It's just the way the numbers look. The numbers at 120 look a little bit scarier than 20, you know?
Yeah, I guess. Right. If he's a bust, it looks even worse.
Man, maybe they should aim for someone like Gio Reyna, man. That guy is popping off.
Hey, yeah. American talent. Starting to make a little bit of a turnaround.
And they're making some noise, man.
Got some prospects. So who's your favorite transfer from deadline day? Because it was a really quiet deadline day just because of the financial restrictions so many teams are being put under. We'd normally see teams like Real Madrid make a ton of splash, ton of noise. A lot of teams were, you know, financially constricted. So a lot of teams opted for trying to get loans with future options to pay for the player. I think this year we definitely saw a lot of not nearly as many moves as we would have, which is kind of a bummer, but that's just the year it is. I'm going to go with my Bayern Munich team for my favorite transfer from today. They got the loan for Douglas Costa, who was out at Juventus, and he was seeking more playing time. Leroy Sané sidelined with an injury, so they were able to bring back Douglas Costa, who at one point led the team in assists when they were under Pep Guardiola. So it's kind of cool to see an old faces come back. But I'd say my favorite in terms of the best move from today, I would give it to Juventus, and when they acquired Federico Chiesa, I think he is going to be an Italian superstar for the future, and he already provides a ton of talent for you at only 20 years old, and he's already playing at a top flight with Fiorentina. So I think the best move of today would be Chiesa to Juventus. They were able to get him on a loan with obligation to buy, so he's joining Juventus pretty much no matter what. Best move from today would be Chiesa, and my favorite move would be Douglas Costa returning to Bayern.
So I'm going to go a little bit more on the unexpected side, maybe on the quieter side. Our good friends over at Everton picked up a goalkeeper on loan today. If you saw their last game, Jordan Pickford, while he's England's number one, in my opinion, he might be a little overrated as a goalkeeper, and I thought that for a long time, even prior to Everton being good. I just don't think he's the best. And he definitely has this slip-up. So I think, I'm not saying them adding this lone goalkeeper is going to be, you know, he's going to come in and be their number one. But adding some competition in a position might put, you know, Jordan Pickford to kind of step up his game, because everybody else on Everton is firing on all cylinders. You know, you need your goalkeeper to be doing the same. Don't sleep on a small...
Don't want your starters feeling too comfortable knowing that they'll start every single day. Competition is always good. Now it's time for our favorite headline from the week.
Do you want good news or do you want bad news?
Hit me with the bad first.
Hit you with the bad? All right, so you can get dessert later. I feel that. This one hurt me, man. So the man behind the Gunnersaurus mascot, a.k.a. the Arsenal Gunners mascot, has been let go by the club after 27 years of service. I was just like, why? This man has done more for your club than David Luiz has. can we not like spare a cool mil from that extension or from the Wallian contract? Just, you don't even have to take it from one player. Just take it from the 11, you know, make it like a GoFundMe from the players. That's the least they can do, man. This man has served your club 27 years. And now you tell me they won't have a mascot? This man has a family of dinosaurs to feed. Please.
Yeah, after 27 years and now you get into financial restructuring and you decide the mascot's the way to go, how much does that really help you financially as a club?
Yeah, that's kind of cold.
Exactly, dude. It's super sad.
My favorite headline of the week came during the English FA Cup, Tottenham versus Chelsea. Headline reads, Eric Dier had to go for a poo during League Cup game in the middle of the match, runs into the tunnel sprinting to use the bathroom, and then at the end of the day, he wins man of the match.
Big plays, I guess.
And then later, he tweeted out a photo of man of the match trophy, and he posted a photo of it on a toilet with some toilet paper.
little quick story of when I played high school ball. Our coach in high school told us a story about one of his players once who mid-game, he, instead of running off the field like Eric Dyer, he went on himself. And we used to play in white kits, like white uniforms. He said, if I'll never forget that game. No, no, dead serious. Like, our coach would have never lied about this. Our coach was a very serious man. And he said he'll never forget, because he was like, the guy came off and he's like, coach, no one wants to defend me. And he was like, well, I wonder why. So anybody who's familiar with exercising, running, we all get the like need to go to the bathroom. Like, that is a normal thing for your body. So I respect Eric Dyer for being like, I need to go and I got to go now. And then he still comes back and gets man of the match. Props to him all around.
But like, did that make him better though?
Dude, it's a weight lifted off of you. Like, you released a weight.
Staying on the field, doing it there, that's big brain strats. Nobody's going to touch you.
Dude, like, come on. Just, I don't know if any game, like, if it's the Champions League final, I might get it. Come on, man. Like, a high school game when you're wearing white.
It's not worth it. It's not worth it.
Really not. On that note, that's all the time we have today, guys. Thank you so much for stopping by. Common Fan Commentary is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcast, and Podomatic. Be sure to check out our Instagram and Facebook. We often post polls and questions there. Hit us up in our DMs if there's anything you would like to see in our next episode. Thank you so much, everybody. We'll catch you later. Welcome back, Rob. It's good to have you.
It's great to be back.
See you guys next time.
Peace out.
See you.